Tarry here, where the stories never grow old, and you hear something new every time they are told and it comes clear. So tarry here, where it doesn't matter your age, and when we gather round the table, we all take the stage year after year. So tarry here.
Welcome to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour. This is Fanny Crawford.
And Stash Ziolkowski.
Today is December 21st. Our theme today is Christmas stories. And we're glad you're here.
Thanks to Andy Offit Irwin for bringing us on the air with that wonderful song of his, Tarry Here.
Isn't it wonderful?
It is. Makes me feel like sitting in, well, I am sitting in my rocking chair, but it makes me feel like I ought to be out on the porch in the sunshine, but it's a little bit chilly out on my front porch.
Well, it just reminds me why we do this.
Yes. Yes, it does.
So do you have an update for us?
I do have an update. I have the first storytelling of the Speak Story series, which now is a part of the Speak Storytelling Inc. And the opening concert of the 2021 season is going to be featuring Daniel Morden.
Woohoo! Wow.
M-O-R-D-E-N. I take it you must know him.
Oh,
or you're just excited.
What a guy. What a among the best storytellers in the world, at least when I heard him.
Wow. See, I've never heard him. I don't know.
You're in for a treat.
The only thing I know about him is Adam said, I've been trying to get this guy.
So, back. He had it once.
Well.
But I do have to tell you that his most stunning performance was at Jonesboro. His first time at Jones. I think he's only been at Jonesboro once, although I'm not sure. But anyway, I heard him there. And part of the charm was that he was totally uncharmed by Jonesboro. He had not wanted to come. Ed Stuyvesant invited him on behalf of the festival, and he said no. And that's an interesting story too. But he just blew me away.
Yeah. Well, the public service announcement that I have on him sounds very powerful. The show is going to be January 12th, 2021 at 7:30 through by Zoom. And Daniel's program is entitled The News of the Strange: Tales from the Arab World. That should certainly spice up anybody's listening. Mm-hmm. So tickets are $15. But if you're a season ticket holder, as someone we know is, then you don't have to pay because you've already paid up front. And okay. Speak is, this is for adult audiences. You know, if parents want to bring, parents or guardians want to bring somebody to the show who's younger than what we consider an adult, a mature youth would enjoy these kind of stories, but not, these are not for children. Anyway, I'm looking forward to this very much. And he's been a professional storyteller since 1989. And he's traveled the world, has a huge repertoire from timeless Greek myths and thrilling adventures to awful jokes. And that's a quote. And he's won a number of awards for his books and was recently awarded the medal at the Hay Festival. And I don't have any details about what the Hay Festival is. So,
Okay.
So, and I'm excited about it because this is a new season. starting in January. And, you know, it is exciting about what Speak Story Series is doing. Now that we're a 501c3 organization, and there's some different approaches, but it's going to be a very interesting season. And at that, hopefully at that performance, Adam will be able to announce the entire year, because he still has some people that he has to figure out dates with and responsibilities. So there you are.
There I am, and I'm happily there.
Yes. Good.
Looking forward to Daniel.
Right. So do you have a story for us?
I do. Are we ready? Are we ready for my story, or are you going to tell a story first?
Well, I don't know if I may have told this story, but I don't think so. It's just something that I've lived with for a long time. And every year about this time, I think I probably have told this story, but I don't know. So what? Anyway, this is a Christmas. This is about Christmas, and it's about it's a personal story about the first Christmas. I was in the Army. So I know that people have heard some of my stuff about the Army, but this was a very interesting first Christmas in the Army. So here we go. I joined the Army in July of 1959 at the ripe old age of 17, just about a month before my 18th birthday. And there were all kinds of reasons for joining the Army. And it turned out to be a wonderful thing in my life because it sent me on a great path. However, when I think about the reasons I joined the Army at the age of 17 back then, I think I could have done a whole lot of other things. But I did have a good 3 years in the Army. So I went to Fort Jackson, South Carolina. 10 weeks of basic training, which could have all kind of other names besides basic training, starting with kind of bad things happening to you. But that too was an exciting experience. Luckily, I played sports all through high school, and so I was in pretty good shape, and so I didn't die because of the activities that we did daily. And basic training was lots of fun. I got into great shape. On the Friday, the last day of basic training before our graduation, which I thought was a hoot to have a graduation ceremony from basic training. But in Fort Jackson, it was a big deal. And they had grandstands set up so that parents of the new soldiers could come and watch a parade and some falderal about being a young soldier. The graduation was kind of fun, but it was also like, wow, this is worse than my high school graduation.
Did they play Pomp and Circumstance?
No, they played some military type tunes, and it was. And they had a marching band and everything, which none of us had seen. You know, we were at Fort Jackson for a little over 10 weeks, and we didn't know that there was going to be a band, and we didn't see any marching around, so it was a surprise. But on that Friday evening, myself and four others, were called to the first sergeant's office after the evening meal, and he had us sit down in his office. He had brought chairs in for us and told us that the schooling we had been assigned to after basic training, people were going to all kinds of different schools. Some were going to become paratroopers and things like that. But the five of us were going to Texas to school. And he had to talk to us personally because he really wanted us to know. He had nothing to do with this. It was just the way the Army works. We were not going to be given a pass, a leave to go home. Most of the time, in fact, all of us expected at least a week and maybe 2 weeks at home after basic training before we actually began being real soldiers. And he said, we, the five of us, were going to be put into a vehicle immediately after the graduation ceremony was over, and we had to be ready to have our stuff packed and loaded, and we were going to the train station because we had an early afternoon train hookup on our way to El Paso, Texas, which sounds like the end of the world. Also, for a few of us out of the five, it was a shocking time because I was engaged, and that's a whole other story, but my, at the time, future mother-in-law was planning to have a celebration for me. And that was going to be on Saturday night, Saturday evening. However, that Thursday before, the day before this meeting with the sergeant, I had gotten a letter from my mother, who also was planning a party for Saturday evening with my family, my brothers and sister in their children and some cousins and some of my friends from the neighborhood. Well, I didn't know what to do about any of that. And so sometimes when I'm faced with a very difficult decision, starting as a very young child, the thing I did best was to just put it on the side and do whatever I had to do at the time. And that was get ready for graduation parade, pack my clothes. So on Saturday, the parade was over. They put us on a very fancy vehicle, a 5-ton, you know, 2.5-ton open bed truck with all of our gear. And the sergeant who was driving us had an assistant, so no one got to sit inside the cab. The five of us rode with our duffel bags in the back of the truck to the train station. The nice thing about it was the Army had secured tickets and everything, so we didn't have to think about anything at the train station. All we had to do was find the information about when the train was leaving that we were assigned to. And actually, we were met by a porter who was very helpful in getting our gear hooked up with the train and us on the, in the proper car. So that was quite a trip. We went from Columbia, South Carolina. We went cross country, heading west, and saw all kind of interesting things. One of the things that stuck out in my mind, still does, it took us almost an entire day to cross Texas. It took us most of Saturday to get anywhere near Arkansas. And we did have a stop at Texarkana, which I thought was a very funny name, but it happens to be a city that is on the border of Texas and Arkansas. And so, you know, somebody came up with the clever name of Texarkana. And years later, I actually lived not too far from there and went to Texarkana for other reasons. Our train had a stop at Texarkana, and when the porter came through, I asked how long the stop was going to be because he announced it. And he said, oh, about 25, 26 minutes. And I said, is there any chance I could make a phone call? He said, yeah, right in the station. They have, you know, phones. You have some coins, put it in, make a phone call. But you, if you get off this train, you better not be late, because it will not wait. It will be leaving. And, you know, so, but he did point to a place down the track, not too far from where we were parked. And I did hustle down there, and I had to make two phone calls, both of which I would gladly have not done if I had an excuse like, no, they wouldn't let me get to a phone when I was under guard or I was handcuffed. So I made those two phone calls, and they were to my mother and to Jane's mother. And I spoke to Jane for about 15 seconds when I called her house, said I had to talk to her mother, even though I really wanted to be a coward and not talk to her mother and just tell Jane, figured she could explain things better. But so I talked to Mrs. Mixa, and she was very sad because they were really excited about me coming home. And she told me she was going to announce some wedding plans, which was a big shock because I knew I was engaged and I wanted to get married at some point, but I didn't want to get married then. Then I had to call my mother, and my mother was really upset because my mother didn't understand how the Army could do that to her sainted baby and just change the plans and send them off. But luckily my father was there, and he was able to calm her down. So back on the train, and made it in plenty of time, and spent the rest of that weekend all day Sunday, and then arrived in El Paso, Texas, early Monday morning. Oh, and it was the beginning of a great experience in my first school in the Army. And when I finished the classwork, I actually became an instructor, which was another thing so bizarre about the Army. Can you imagine an 18-year-old being an instructor in anything? I could if it was a sport, maybe, but anyway, I was fortunate. And years later, having taken this position as an instructor and teaching some classes on different things that National Guards people had to attend, and many officers, and all older than me by most of the time, at least 4 years, and sometimes as much as eight. And the years later, when I was teaching in Baltimore County, someone checked on my record and found out that I had an instructor's license in the Army. And they gave me extra credit on the pay scale for having been an instructor in the military, which was really good. So anyway, he came up to this time of year, and we all were excited about going home for Christmas, because we were, the five of us, were the only ones out of 220 people in our company in basic training who did not get to go home after training, basic training. So our first sergeant had us in a situation where he was going to explain things about the Christmas leave, because we were told there was going to be Christmas leave. We were assured we were going to get Christmas leave. It was sworn to. Our sergeant, Sergeant Jakubowski, we called him Sergeant Jake, he had us in a group, and there were 24 of us that were due for this leave. And he explained that there was an A part and a B part, just like two different companies, an A company and a B company. And he said, One group will get a leave from December 10th. And our hearts stopped because we knew that meant something was wrong. Nobody gets to leave from December 10th until Christmas. And he explained that that group would go on leave December 10th and have to report back by the end of the duty day on December 22nd. And then he explained that the A group would get a leave starting on December 23rd, and they would have to be back for duty on the morning of January 3rd. And then he picked up his hat, which was just like, in those days, they weren't the fancy baseball cap type that they wear in the Army now. They were the soft thing like you would see in the movies or TV show like MASH, where they didn't have baseball caps. And when he did, he took it off the desk and it rattled. And he said, "I have marbles in this hat. I'm going to walk in front of you and hold the hat up at my eye level. You reach in and pick out a marble. If you get a black marble, you're in group B, which means you will not be home for Christmas. You'll be home, but not at Christmas. And if you get a white marble, you're in the A group." And I thought that was interesting. Even in the Army, white stood for something better than black, you know, like good and evil is. So luckily, I picked a white marble. So I was excited. I could tell my parents and my sweetheart that I was going to be home for Christmas. So went to the train station and found out that if I left on the 23rd from El Paso, I would arrive in Baltimore on the morning of the 25th. But it was a long train ride. But it was interesting. We played cards a lot and met a woman by the name of Samantha, who said, "Just call me Sam," because we were looking for somebody to play pinochle with us, and there were three of us, and we couldn't find a fourth. And this woman, who was not a soldier and probably surely old enough to be a mother of most of us, said, "If you're really stuck, I'll play." And we were shocked. She said, "As long as we're not playing for money. I don't want to take money away from any soldiers." So and it gave us a laugh, you know, because she was kind of old, you know, and we were young soldiers. We, you know, we knew how to play cards, all this stuff. Anyway, she pretty much cleaned us out. she was a very good card player, and so the train ride was pretty boring except for playing cards. And on the morning of December 25th, train I was on pulled into Penn Station in Baltimore, Maryland. And when we got off the train, we were standing around, waiting, because my mother had told me on the phone that my brother would be there to pick me up. And I did ask her if Jane would be there, and she sort of grudgingly said yes, they would pick up Jane and bring her to the station too. So anyway, my father, my mother, my brother Tony, and my girlfriend were going to meet me. But I was waiting, and there was an Air Force officer that I had spoken to when we first got off the train and got our gear. And I told him about, you know, my parents were going to pick me up, my sweetheart, and all this stuff. And he was waiting for his in-laws and his wife to pick him up. And we waited there for a good maybe 45 minutes. And finally, I know he had the impression that no one was coming to pick me up. Because I went from being very excited when we got there to walking back and forth and looking at the clock, and the place actually was pretty empty on Christmas morning. And he offered me the opportunity to come to his house and have Christmas with them, because I know he actually believed I didn't have any place to go for Christmas. But just as he was engaged in that conversation with me, my name was called out over the loudspeaker system. They asked to report to the main ticket office. And when I got there, there was a phone call from me. And it was my brother who said, "We'll be there as soon as we can. It's only about 2 miles, if that. We came to the wrong station." At that time in Baltimore, there was a place called Camden Yards, which is very famous now, because Camden Yards was a train station that was closed. And a number of years ago, the Baltimore Orioles moved from Memorial Stadium to Camden Yards. Anyway, my brother had picked the wrong station because he didn't think I'd be coming in and Penn Station, because he thought for some reason that was like where rich people rode the train. Anyway, so finally, my mother, my father, Jane, and my brother came and picked me up. And I had a wonderful Christmas break. I found out that my brother and his girlfriend, who had been my girlfriend in eighth grade, were getting married on January 10th. I actually thought they were going to get married later in January, but it turned out that I wouldn't be there for the wedding, because I had to get on the train on January 1st. It was the only connection I could make and get back in time to Texas. So the two times I was in Penn Station, coming home on Christmas Day, started out very sad because I thought I was abandoned. My mind was going crazy over that. And then just 1 week later, on New Year's Day, I was getting on a train packed and with a lot of military people as well as civilians. And I had to say goodbye to my family again. And that was the fastest week I ever spent at any Christmas time. Though I did have a wonderful time at home for Christmas. And that's my story.
Great story. I love the Baltimore iconic landmarks too.
Wow.
Especially Penn Station being for rich people. I love that part.
I think the only time my brother had ever been to the train station was to go to Camden Yards. And that was... It was actually kind of in our neighborhood, you know, not too far from where our house was. But anyway, we had a great week. You know, we did a lot of interesting things, and there were a couple of parties. But it was very sad to get on that train on January 1st, on New Year's Day. And it seemed that the ride back seemed like the longest possible. I think it was 46 hours or something in the train. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And that was the beginning of my Christmas adventures in the military.
Well, we will look forward to chapter two.
Okay.
Oh, my. Okay. Well, I can give you a little brief report on the Christmas play that I was in.
I would love to hear that. That's great.
It hasn't been, the congregation hasn't seen it yet, of course, because it'll be brought, will be Zoomed on Christmas Eve. But we did have fun.
Wow.
A radio play about the first Christmas. So there's a manger and a stable and an innkeeper and animal noises. So that really was the guy doing the animal noises was the hit of
performance
so far. But nobody's going to hear it until Christmas Eve. I'm really looking forward to that. It's only about an hour.
It's going to be open to the public? I mean, available?
If people want to watch, I can arrange for you to be. You have to have a special invitation for the church to send you the link. There have been so many Unitarian churches Zoom bombed and harassed.
Really?
Yeah, that we are really vigilant about who gets in. I mean, anybody can get in, but we have to give people permission to get in. There's a gatekeeper.
Yeah. Well, would you make it so I could?
Sure. I thought about inviting you, but I didn't. I figured you would have other things to do at 7. I can't remember if it's 7 or 7:30 Christmas Eve. You're not going to Bender's for dinner?
No, I doubt that they'll be open Christmas Eve.
Okay.
And besides, we don't go to restaurants.
That's right. You've been getting takeout from restaurants.
Yeah. Our big excitement occurred last evening. Terry and I got in the car and we drove the streets of Sharpsburg. You know, there are three main east-west streets, and so we drove and managed to cover all of them, and then left town heading for Shepherdstown because we were looking at Christmas lights.
And we saw a fine activity.
Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful decorations. And then we got to Shepherdstown and just kind of meandered through the town. And then drove over near where Adam Booth lives and discovered that there were lots and lots and lots and lots of houses that we had never seen in that area where Adam lives, and saw wonderful decorations and drove through the streets of Shepherdstown afterwards and then headed home. And we had lots of fun. It was the first Christmas activity that I think made me feel kind of, yeah, like this is something that you do at Christmas time to see the lights. And we had done that at other places. Once on a Christmas vacation, we went where they had a mile or two of decorations that weren't houses. They were on a country road kind of thing, but it was really beautiful decorations and kind of, you know, you had to stay in line in the cars and go slowly, and it was very nice. So
that's are exciting. You're giving me ideas
of what to go driving and look at the Yeah.
We could stop at Nutter's.
You could. And yeah. And
for ice cream.
And sometimes sometimes I get the right urge. I walked in the house after walking up to the post office on Saturday. I walked in the house and said, "There's nobody in Nutter's. What kind of ice cream do you want?" to my wife, and she told me, and I went next door, and I got my favorite ice cream and got hers, and we celebrated, and we were celebrating, I don't know what, but something.
You were celebrating ice cream.
Yeah. And
that's all you need to know.
Right. So we only do that about once every 3 months.
How late is Nutter's open in the evening?
Till 6 o'clock. No, till 8 o'clock. Two to eight. Yeah. And you have to have cash and you have to have a mask.
All right. I'm making a plan.
Good. There you go.
Okay. My story is from Czechoslovakia.
Ooh.
About the 12 days of Christmas, from December 26th until January 6th. And in Czechoslovakia and in old Europe, the 12 days often, not always, but often represented the 12 months of the year. And people would use the events and the weather on each of those days to predict what life would be like on that month, during that month in the coming year. So it was important to pay attention to the 12 days of Christmas. It's called The 12 Brothers, and this telling is by Caitlin Matthews and Helen Kahn, C-A-N-N, from Fireside Stories, Tales from a Winter's Eve. And I really like this story. 12 brothers. Long, long ago, in a far-off forest, lived a widow with two small girls. One was her own daughter, Helena, while the other was her stepdaughter, Marusha. Now, Helena was a spoiled little girl, and Marusha was made to do all the work. It was Marusha who went to the well at dawn to fetch water, Marusha who scrubbed and cooked, Marusha who spun and wove until darkness came. As the girls grew, Marusha's reputation for hard work and kindness grew, and Helena's reputation for idleness and a sharp temper grew as well. And soon their mother realized that unless Marusha left, no one would ever marry lazy Helena. One bitter winter day, she called Marusha and said, "Your sister needs violets. Go out and fetch her some." She fully intended that Marusha should be devoured by the hungry wolves roaming the forest. "But where will I find violets in winter?" cried Marusha, as she was pushed outside, wearing only her thin indoor dress. Shivering against the cruel north wind, she walked on till nightfall, fearful of the wolves she could hear howling, coming nearer and nearer with every step. She was about to give up and lie down in the snow and fall asleep forever when she saw a light flickering on a hilltop. She stumbled toward the flame, hoping to find shelter. But when she came to the hill, she startled in amazement. The scene before her was unlike anything she had ever seen in her life. It was like a story or a song from olden times. There was a great fire burning, and seated in silence, a circle of 12 great stones with 12 men, who all stared at her. They were unlike any men she'd ever seen. Three were old, old men with long white beards dressed in dark blue. There were three cloaked in purple, middle-aged, and in scarlet, three men in the prime of their lives. The last were the youngest, youths dressed in white and green. But seated on the largest stone was one of the ancient men with a great club in his hand. Marusha curtsied to him and asked, "Please, sir, might I be allowed to warm myself by your fire?" The old man had a deep, bell-like voice.
"Who are you, child? And why do you wander so late when the wolves are running?
Marusha told him about her search for violets.
You've come to the right place, for we are the 12 brothers. I am January, chief of all. I cannot give you violets, but my younger brother, March,
can. And old January gave his place to one of the young men in green and white, and as soon as the young man sat in the high seat, the snow melted all around them, and the trees began to bud, and violets sprang up. Quickly take them, commanded young March, with a voice as piercing as the wind. Marusha picked the violets, and thanking him, ran all the way home. The widow could not believe her eyes when she saw the sweet purple flowers in Marusha's hands. Where did you find violets in January? She demanded. Just on the hillside. There was all Marusha would say. So a few days later, the widow tried again. This time, she said, your sister needs strawberries. Don't come home without them. She pushed Marusha out onto the snow without any shoes, thinking, oh, it might have been possible to find early violets amid the snow, but the girl would never find strawberries. Marusha returned to the silent figures on the hilltop where they sat around the fire. The 12 brothers listened to her request, and again, ancient January signaled a younger brother to take his place, and as soon as June in his scarlet clothes sat in the high seat, glorious summer spread over the hill. Bees began to buzz among the white flowers of strawberry plants, which bloomed and became red ripe fruit in an instant. Take what you need, said June, laughing. Marusha plucked the fruit, thanked June for his kindness, and ran all the way home, where her sister greedily ate them. Where did you find these? The widow's eyes glittered with suspicion. Under the trees, by the mountain, was all Marusha would say. A few days later, Helena begged her mother for apples, and the widow sent her sister out into the snow again without even a kerchief for her head. The wind blew strong, and the snow was crisp with ice, as Marusha tramped through, trying not to notice the gleams of the wolf's eyes between the trees. She came to the hilltop for a third time and again asked the 12 for their help. January beckoned to one of the brothers, and as soon as magnificent September in his purple cloak took the high seat, autumn reigned. The leaves began to turn orange, yellow, and red, and an apple tree burst into fruit. Shake it, little daughter, encouraged September, his smile as sweet and his voice as golden ripe as fresh pressed cider. Marusha shook the tree, and down fell two perfect apples. She bowed to September, thanking him, and ran home with the fruit. Helena quickly gobbled up the apples, complaining she wanted more. They were even more delicious than the strawberries. And while the widow was dreaming up new ways to get rid of Marusha, Helena went to her mother and said, Mother, give me your best fur coat and mittens. I want to go out. I'm sure Marusha is keeping most of the fruit she finds for herself, and I want to see her secret supply. With much fussing and complaining, the widow gave Helena permission to go into the cold and look for herself. Helena wrapped herself up with the hooded coat and strode out. Her nose red with cold, she came puffing up the hill to the ring of stones on the top. Without greeting the 12 brothers or asking permission, she pushed in among them and flopped down by the fire to warm herself. January asked, who are you, child, and what do you want here? Helena irritably tossed her head. It's none of your business, old fool. But January rose up in anger, his long beard bristling with frost. He uttered a long, wordless cry in a voice that seemed of one note with the winter winds, and Helena fell back, very frightened. January swung his club over her head, and fat, thick flakes of snow began to fall. Helena fled from the circle of stones, searching for the way home, but the thick white flakes had covered her footprints, and she could not find her way. As she ran, terrified from the old man's rage, the snowflakes danced and spun about her in a shower of ice flakes, and the drifts drew deeper until she fell into the deepest hollow and was quite buried. Waiting at home, the widow grew anxious. Putting on her second best fur coat and mittens, she went out to search for Helena, but January's rage had not abated. The snowstorm lasted all night, and nothing was seen of the widow or her daughter ever again. Marusha did her work, cooked the dinner, fed the cow, and filled her spindle with thread. When her stepmother and stepsister failed to return home that night, she looked out to see the snow had ceased and the stars hung crystal clear in the silence of the winter night. Strangely enough, she did not feel frightened or lonely. Thinking of the 12 brothers that held the year in their hands, she lived with their blessing always in her heart. And when she married and became a mother herself, she taught her own children to honor each month as an uncle who brings different gifts, and always to be thankful for the special blessings of every season.
Wow.
Isn't that a Grimm-like tale?
Yes. And I like that one. Boy, that is very nice. And I know you'd like to keep track of things. So that was just a little over 10 minutes.
All right. Perfect.
That was really nice. Whew.
I might tell more stories from Caitlin Matthews and Helen Kahn.
Yeah, that's neat.
Quite wonderful ones in there.
Right. Boy, well, you've been listening to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenradio.org, broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia. This is Stasia Olkowski and
Fanny Crawford,
your co-hosts. And Fanny just told us a wonderful story from Czechoslovakia. And, we still have time.
Yeah.
But the time sure goes by fast.
It does.
We should start doing the 3-hour show or something.
We'll need a couple more co-hosts.
Yeah. No, I don't want anybody else to be with us.
Oh, Stosh.
I think two people are plenty for a co-host. I'm just afraid you might find somebody better. You know, and that would kick me off.
There is no such thing.
Okay. I have a question. I did want to, I do want to do the night before Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a question before that, just for a minute or two. What is your absolute, absolute favorite memory of Christmas? No matter when, no matter what age, just the best memory you have of a Christmas time.
Well, I've been thinking about that because, you know, it's Christmas. And so we're thinking about stories and thinking about new stories and personal stories. And the only thing I've been able to come up with is that it's the constancy, the consistency of knowing when I was a kid, that every Christmas morning, my brother and I, who's 5 years younger than me, so I would be in charge, of course. We were entrusted to get up whenever we wanted to. It was assumed that that would be after dawn, but in fact, that sometimes did not happen. It was sometimes before dawn. I would anyway be up, and if I was up, I would sometimes go and get my brother, though not always. We could open our Christmas presents that were in our little piles. Each of us would have a pile of Christmas presents. We couldn't open anything. We couldn't examine anything that was wrapped, because those were often from family members, relatives, friends who weren't there. But we could open our family presents and play with them until my parents got up. We were not allowed to wake our parents up, because of course they had been up till 3 and 4 in the morning the night before. And that quiet time, I soon learned that sometimes presents meant more if I waited to open them. But I was probably 10 or 11 before that happened. Anyway.
Well.
Getting up in the dark.
Yes. One thing I wanted to point out to our listeners, especially those who might be of the, the Christmas, not necessarily the religious, but people who follow the stories from the Bible and in lots of churches now at this time of year, the Christmas star is going to appear in the sky. And tonight will be the best and brightest. And it'll last for a while. And the Christmas star actually this year is the conjunction of the planets Jupiter and Saturn. And if you watch the skies, and as I've been doing for a long time, Saturn and Jupiter have appeared in the southwest, in the sky in the southwest, for a couple of months now, and they've been getting closer and closer together to our point of view. They're actually millions of miles away from each other, but observed from Earth without a telescope, it will be an incredible sight this evening. Should be the best time to see it if you have a place where you can see the lower part of the sky in the southwest in the evening. The two planets will look as if they're touching, and it should be quite something.
We tried to look last night, but I was too overcast. But the west coast, I was told, saw them bright and clear.
Oh, good.
California and Washington State.
So we're getting close to the end. Shall I do the night before Christmas? Or would you rather not?
Yeah, it depends on whether John wants us to run over or not.
Well, we'll. This is only going to take, it takes less than 4 minutes.
Okay, John.
Ready?
Full speed ahead.
Okay. It's one of my favorite things. 'Twas the night before Christmas, when all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care, in hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there. The children were nestled all snug in their beds, while visions of sugar plums danced in their heads. And Mama in her kerchief, and I in my cap, had just settled their brains for a long winter's nap. When out on the lawn there arose such a clatter, I sprang from the bed to see what was the matter. Away to the window I flew like a flash, tore open the shutters and threw up the sash. The moon on the breast of the new-fallen snow gave the luster of midday to objects below. When what to my wondering eye should appear but a miniature sleigh and 8 tiny reindeer. With a little old driver so lively and quick, I knew in a moment it must be St. Nick. More rapid than eagles his coursers they came, and he whistled and shouted and called them by name. Now Dancer, now Prancer, now Dasher, now Dancer, now Prancer and Vixen. On Comet, on Cupid, on Donder and Blitzen, to the top of the porch, to the top of the wall. Now dash away, dash away, dash away all. As dry leaves before the wild hurricane fly, when they meet with an obstacle, mount to the sky. So up to the housetop, the coursers they flew, with a sleigh full of toys and St. Nicholas too. And then in a twinkling, I heard on the roof the prancing and pawing of each little hoof. As I drew in my head and was turning around, down the chimney St. Nicholas came with a bound. He was dressed all in fur from his head to his foot, and his clothes were all tarnished with ashes and soot. A bundle of toys was flung on his back, and he looked like a peddler just opening his pack. His eyes, how they twinkled, his dimples, how merry. His cheeks were like roses, his nose like a cherry. His droll little mouth was drawn up like a bow, and the beard of his chin was as white as the snow. The stump of a pipe he held tight in his teeth, and the smoke it encircled his head like a wreath. He had a broad face and a round little belly that shook when he laughed like a bowl full of jelly. He was chubby and plump, a right jolly old elf, and I laughed when I saw him in spite of myself. A wink of his eye and a twist of his head soon gave me to know I had nothing to dread. He spoke not a word, but went straight to his work and filled all the stockings and turned with a jerk. And laying his finger aside of his nose and giving a nod up the chimney, he rose. He sprung to his sleigh, to his team gave a whistle, and away they all flew like the down of a thistle. But I heard him exclaim ere he drove out of sight, "Happy Christmas to all, and to all a good night."
Wonderful. Thank you, Sash.
I love that. One of the nicest things I ever got to do at a school was at a private school in Baltimore where I worked and was the planetarium director and taught all the science from first to sixth grade. The first Christmas that I was there, the headmaster asked if I would like to do something at the Christmas assembly for the school. And he knew I did acting and some storytelling, and I think so. So I told him I would recite The Night Before Christmas, and so I did, and it was amazing that almost 400 children in that nice auditorium. It wasn't an auditorium; it was actually a theater kind of setting, that stage and. And it was sloped seats so that you are looking down towards the stage. Nobody's head would get in your way. And so I just stood in front of the school and recited that. And it was a funny thing because the children were lined up from kindergarten and then back to the sixth grade. And as I was telling that, I was amazed that there was not a single eye in the audience that I could see that wasn't looking at me. And afterwards, I was told by one of the teachers that her class were just amazed that somebody as old as I was could remember all those words. And the funny thing is, I was only 50. I thought, wow, but it was such a pleasure to tell that because the children, many of them had seen the book, you know, in the library. They had lots of books like that, which have great pictures for it, but they had not heard someone just do that by itself. So it was a nice thing.
This is Fanny Crawford.
And Stasz Ziolkowski.
Your co-host for the Noontime Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenradio.org. We're independent community radio broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia, and now closing out this week's storytelling show. Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour offers listeners a window into the world of storytelling by traditional and non-traditional tellers, encouraging our listening community to share, preserve, and expand all of our stories. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned for...
Probably going to be a bluegrass day, but I'm not sure yet. I have to think about it for a minute here.
All right.
Music.
See you next.
It'll be for today. Okay, guys.
Okay. Take care.
Slash Thursday.
Yes. Are we doing Christmas a show next Sunday?
Yes.
Christmas Eve. Well, I don't. It's Christmas Eve is just a day.
All right. Okay.
I'll don't do anything that's 11. Crazy or not. You know. So.
John, we're doing a show next Monday.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you, guys.
Thank you very much for listening.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, John.
Bye-bye. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.